Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Golly, you know what? I just love that intro. My name is Jerome, and I am the same environmentalist. And I'm lucky enough today to be sharing the show with my co-host, our show, Lonnie Clark. She is a good friend of mine. And Lonnie, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Jerome, for asking me to share your show with you. I really appreciate this because this is we hardly ever. Hopefully, now that I'm out of school, we'll have more time to co-host together because I think we actually make a pretty good team.
Yes, we do. So today, you know, I've been harping on about the grid, as I'm sure anybody who follows me on YouTube will know. I've been looking and investigating the grid that attaches our society to its sources of energy and data, and all of the negativity just involved with that grid, and how we can reduce the grid, as it were. And by reducing the grid, we solve pretty much just about all of the biggest environmental issues that we have. Carbon levels would drop precipitously. It's a doable thing. And, you know, we have basically gigawatts of energy bouncing off our planet back into space, which could be collected by just something sitting on the ground. So people are doing that now. And I was mentioning a little town in Japan, just north, literally, of Fukushima. And it's called Higashi Matsushima, Japan, and it's a little town that had about 10,000 people in it. It got washed out big time by the tsunami, and they're recreating the town, but they're rebuilding it with super high strength, smaller structures that each has its own independent source of electricity, and a central battery system with a communal solar system, and as well all of that backed up with biodiesel generators in the event that which is basically a gas generator. In the event of all else fails, there's no grid, you still have 10,000 gallons of biodiesel, which is enough energy to power your whole community for a while. So, and it would be removed from the grid, that whole, if it was every town all the way up and down the coast of Japan, all of a sudden, there wouldn't be a need for the Fukushima Daiichi power plant anymore, or anything. So what it does is this activity of each house taking care of its own needs with the energy which is hitting the house is the really only solution that I have been able to come up with that I can understand. It's unfortunate that the people of this lovely little place, Matsushima. That is such a large word.
And the thing is, it's Higashi Matsushima.
Gosh, it's a big word.
Higashi Matsushima.
So yeah, I wanted to just discuss about that sort of thing, and also the fact that they're letting people move there and build houses already, and still pollution has got to exist. So what do you think of all that?
Well, I think it's really sad. This place, actually, for people's reference, is right above Sendai. So it's not right in Fukushima. Sendai is north of Fukushima. It's on the coast. And that was right where the radioactive plume went. And I think it makes sense that people there, because they're not leaving. They were never evacuated, right? And they were getting their stuff from Sendai, and I think maybe they wanted to go off the grid like this and create this alternative energy so that the Japanese government couldn't tell them that they had to have this, because right now they're clicking on all these, there's a few nuclear power plants in Japan that they've gotten the go ahead. So Japan is making this big push. The IAEA is very I don't know if anybody's ever actually taken the time to read the charter of the IAEA, but its mission is to promote nuclear energy and to ensure the safety of people. And those two things are antithetical to each other, but their primary mission is to promote nuclear energy, which is why they always say no harm to human health, because if they said it was harmful, they couldn't promote nuclear energy. So that kind of makes sense, you know. I mean, people have to go off the grid. We don't really have an option. It's pretty soon the grid is going to be going away anyways. Let's just get clear, you know. It's not a matter of if, it's kind of a matter of when the whole thing is going to collapse, I think.
Right. And the sooner the better. You know, the only thing that, you know, that I can think of, I mean, this little town is actually going to completely power themselves, and that includes cooking and everything, heat, cooking, everything. And it snows there. Japan's not tropical all the time. It gets cold in Japan, especially farther north. But they're creating a totally self-sustaining community.
Well, in this article that I found when you started talking to me about it, I did a quick search. I just typed in the name as best I could based on how you said it, and I actually found the article. And it's from Reuters. It's September 19th, 2017. And in it, there's a professor, Andrew Dewitt, professor of energy policy at Ricoh University in Tokyo. He says, since Fukushima, there's been a gradual elaboration of policies to realize a kind of autonomy, local consumption paradigm, because they've realized that they have to do something independently. You know, it said it's built its own transmission grid and solar generating panels, as well as batteries to store power that can keep the city running for at least 3 days.
Right.
That's actually pretty awesome. In case something happens, like they had a big earthquake or something and the system went down, they have three days of energy.
And if it gets really bad, they're able to provide power to hospitals and emergency facilities for longer than 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have a solar revolution going on this planet. And I think that has got to be it. Yeah, there's a front end green cost to building solar panels, and a lot of tailings and waste and bad things, you know. But overall, it does pay back for itself, and you could. It doesn't make a mess that you cannot clean up the way nuclear does. You know, you can clean up tailings piles, and you can do things, you know. We can be clever about that. Not, you can't be clever about nuclear power. It just, once it gets out, it's out, and you can't clean it up. You know, everybody talks about cleaning up nuclear. You can't clean up nuclear. You can pave it over. That's what they did to the power plant. You know, and now TEPCO's bragging, oh, people can walk around here without even a radiation suit on. They're bragging about that. You know, wow. Of course, everybody has to wear a film badge, but yeah, you don't even need a radiation suit. And they just said it right there because all the radiation has been paved over.
Wow.
So all the radiation is basically hitting the bottom of that asphalt, which is now covering the entire site, and just flowing back down the hill and out to sea under the asphalt and through the power plants. So that, in effect, actually directs even more water. There's no evaporation going on in that area. It's, Fukushima will continue to poison the earth for the next hundreds of years.
Well,
the whole area will get worse and worse and worse and worse.
Not just Fukushima. We have let's take a list of the known Fukushima's. We have Fukushima first. Fukushima's now become king. And then what used to be in first place was Hanford. And then we have the WIPP, WIPP. We have Chernobyl, which is still not solved. And we have Sellafield. Those are known gaping holes, nuclear gaping holes. And we don't even know about the ones in parts of Russia and the Ukraine, like where the war is going on in the Ukraine. We have no idea.
Or Korea or India.
Right. Well, actually, I think China
India
actually
has a nuclear program, doesn't it?
Yes. And here we are. Look, you can go to NETC.com, you know, which is a network of people who have joined this network where they take actually nuclear testing. There's people that are testing around the United States. I mean, there's levels of very high concern. They have these little pie charts where they show where it's background radiation, rising radiation, elevated, and concern and watch. And in our country right now, today, what was reported, you know, we have of concern in Reno. They have somebody measured 393 counts per minute. In Anaheim, California, 299. This is CPM of gamma in energy range of 600 to 800 keV. So these, we have high levels already. When your guest last week said, we don't have low levels of radiation anywhere anymore on the planet, he was completely right, because even when we're looking at like where it calls it, you know, regular just background radiation levels, we're talking low of 143. This is considered around the nuclear power plants, 127, 131 of gamma rays. This is why we have an explosion of autism all around the East. The East has the highest levels of autism and child birth defects. That's the net result of nuclear.
Yeah, and nuclear is a big money maker. You know, you really do and I'm not supporting or saying nuclear is good or okay at all. I'm just saying the energy density per unit volume with nuclear is the highest of any other burnable piece of power, okay? And I mean coal, I mean oil, something that produces heat, that produces steam, okay? And nuclear, you can combine the most energy, it's the most dense log that you can put on a fire. And it'll burn and burn and burn and produce tons of energy for a long, long time. And, you know, that was the appeal. It was, this is unlimited free energy. You know, nobody, of course, considering the cost of refining, milling, mining, and all that. Wow, you got so much noise going on. Do you have a fan on or something?
I don't. You know what? Let me go turn off my heater. Maybe that's what you're hearing. Let me turn that off. I'll be right back.
Sounds like a hurricane.
Okay, hold on.
I don't know if you guys could hear that, but it was just very... Skype gets sketchy. It gets sketchy. Is there any other platform we could go to, people? Please email me at HebertJerome@gmail.com and let me know, is there any better way that we could conduct any software you know of, open source preferably, that would allow us to conduct these interviews person to person without all the noise and hoopla and getting disconnected and all that stuff that we experience.
Oh, I think especially if they pass that net, and you know, if they kill the net today, then it's going to get worse. How's that? Does that sound better? I turned it off at the fuse box.
Yes, that made a huge difference because it was, yeah, much better.
Great.
Because every time your mic went on, it was like, you'll see what I mean when you listen later.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for letting me know. You know what I did want to mention today is how bizarre the, you know, I mentioned the NETC, right? This was the first day. Today I checked in. I always go, whenever I get on the radio, I always check on the nuclear alerts at the NRC. Today was the first day I've ever seen where nothing was reported. That kind of creeped me out. I don't know why, but I mean, I guess I'm expecting bad news every day or something to happen, but I just think it's bizarre that nothing happened today. When yesterday, what happened was at Grand Gulf, Grand Gulf was at 15% power. There was an, quote, accident mitigation, right? And then they also have in South Texas where these very high levels of radiation around the NETC, because if you go to NETC, you'll see that in Texas, in San Angelo, Texas, the counts is 274. This one's really high. Fort Worth, Texas, 449 counts per minute. 449. And there's another one, 284, and that's in Dallas, Texas. So
they
think...
For the upper Colorado Plateau?
Let's see. Let me take a look at the Colorado Plateau and close this box. Let's see. That one, Salt Lake City. It looks like Colorado Springs looks normal at 398 counts per minute. It looks like it's background level. That's what they consider background level for that area.
Right.
Because they go by what the government says is background level. So I guess that's background level, 398 counts per minute.
And I wish I was smart enough to be able to... What I'm beginning to understand about radiation is you've got different types of radiation, and it's just like a radio signal. You got to have a different antenna and a different receiver for the different... to be able to pick up on these different wavelengths of energy. That's how a counter works, you know, and counts per minute is one, which is actually detecting the number of atomic particles flying past you and through you. Is it gamma or is it alpha or is it neutron? What is it? You know, and so you have different filters and different devices to measure each different type of radiation. And it's sickening to me that it's that complicated, yet the net result of the damage they all do is the same. It's genetic damage, and it kills us and causes mutation.
Well, not only that, you know, the hard part about these people is it seems like they change how they report it, what their standards are. Like, if people start getting their groove on about this and start understanding it, they start referring it to a different way. If you read John Goffman's books, he has a different way, and in fact, I think in his first book, Poison Power, he explains the differences of how they report it, and he actually explains why they report it differently, because they do report it differently, and they do it really to keep people in the dark, to confuse us. It's really gaslighting. It's just a way to gaslight people. It's unconscionable, to be frank.
Well, they're stealing money. That's why they're doing it.
Yeah, well, look how much money they're taking from us right now. And that's why they're going to Saudi Arabia. That's one of the things I really want people to be aware of. While Japan has really been forced to go non-nuclear, although they're starting to kick them back on slowly, the people are resisting. And in America, we're still using our nuclear power plants, but people are really beginning to get hip and get really resist and demand that these leaking facilities be closed. And there's this conversation because we've realized, like Donna Gilmore says, they don't care about human beings. If you talk to these nuclear people that are pro-nuclear, they consider loss of life to just be part of the acceptance of what we have to do to gain the technology. They actually, that doesn't matter to them. They only talk about the money. So in the United States, right, we've started highlighting, like Bob Alvarez just did a really great report, I think, for the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. I think it was Bob Alvarez who showed that the Columbia Generating Station cost is in the negative of $500 million a year. And that, yeah, our right here in Lane County where I live, we get 4% of our power from nuclear power. And because we're tied into that contractually, we pay, our bills are up by at least 20% because we have to pay for their deficit. So he wrote this report to the nuclear, to the Bonneville Power Station, the people who are part of the consortium who could say we're going to close this thing down because it's too expensive or it's too harmful. Well, they've given up on telling them it's too harmful. So now they're trying to convince them it's too expensive. But the power of the industry is so strong that that report is essentially, it's being acknowledged. They're like, yeah, we know it's expensive, but we're still going to use it anyways.
Yeah, that's a silly stubbornness, isn't it?
I don't know.
Because
I think it's
still
deadly stubbornness.
The fuel bundle packet and the way to get the most steam out of X volume dollars worth of starting product that you can do. That's the thing about nuclear, is the amount of energy you get for the money you spend over the long haul is more. But there you go. You got all the safety issues. That makes it more expensive. There's so many more associated expenses with trying to split atoms for peace, and which is basically what the whole nuclear program started out as, is they called it atoms for peace.
Well, they're just so evil.
Peaceful. They back in the, when we were kids, thought that you'd have nuclear powered cars and planes and rockets and computers and everything would be nuclear powered. Nuclear was good. It was clean. It was good. That's what I grew up with. Okay. It wasn't until the 70s that I started hearing nuclear bad, nuclear bad, nuclear accident, etc. So, you know, we are really the first generation, our generation, that has come to stand against this and point out to not only further future generations, but to people who are uneducated, that hey, this is bad. Nuclear is bad, you know. And the thing always is, well, we're stuck with it. What are we going to do? And this microgrid thing. That's the only way that you can get rid of nuclear power plants is if enough communities don't need their electricity anymore. Then they're first thing they're going to shut down is the nuclear plant. You know, they probably go through as much of their fuel as they can, but they aren't going to purchase new fuel. You know, and they got the whole spent fuel pool cooling for years and years before dry cask storage for years and years, and then you got it forever. You know, but industry has a wonderful short memory. It's like all these abandoned tailings piles in Cherokee Nation up around the Grand Canyon. We have no idea who made this mess. You know, all the tailings piles in that little town. I did a where they did lead and lead mining. I forget the name of the town, but the kids in that town were so autistic that they had to literally evacuate the town. And nobody knows who ran those mines. Gosh, that was what, 40 years ago? Could have been anybody. So there's
well,
no.
Well, look, they're even doing it now, though, Jerome. I mean, really, like, There, what do you think the Big Ears? What do you think the Big Ears Monument's about? Big Ears Monument is about expanding uranium mining in Big Ears. They want to have pipelines going through Big Ears from Canada straight through Big Ears, and they want to have uranium mining. It's just a giveaway to the energy company because they can, because it makes so much money. They have no regard for human life. This is the thing, the shocker. Like, we're shocked by the state of the political affairs, you know, in this country right now, but we ought not to be so shocked when we realize that both sides, like I spit nails the other day when I saw this article that Eric Prince, who runs Blackwater, was given a $9 billion no-bid contract by the military in the Obama administration. And he did nothing to stop it, which tells you that he can't stop it. The decision was made. He was informed it was going to happen, and it happened. That's why Eric Prince looked at Congress and said, you know what? You guys are wasting my time. I'm out of here the other day. Because the military really is in control of our entire government, period. They were telling Obama what to do. They gave Eric Prince, a known criminal, a known murderer. Eric Prince had to relocate his entire company to Abu Dhabi, or I think
Blackwater
it was.
Blackwater is evil. They're just
straight
evil.
And it's beyond, and his sister is running our Department of Education. That's who Betsy DeVos is Eric Prince's sister. So,
wow.
I mean, evidently it turns out, and I heard this, and I would, this is another great show I recommend people listen to, is the Intercept podcast. You can go to intercept.com. It's Jeremy Scahill. He had a guy on the other day this week interviewing, talking about this very thing, and he was saying that Donald Trump really reveres Eric Prince and highly respects him, and he has been a consultant all throughout his campaign, and in fact, the two of them are figuring out a way to create a little mini CIA for Donald Trump specifically, just for the president to have his own little secret service outside, non-regulated, unaccountable. They can do whatever they want to go to look at people who are against this president. Now, if that doesn't run chills through your spine, I mean, it is really... It's like with the lady who, you know, the ICANN people, they won the 2017 Nobel Peace Prize, right? In her acceptance speech the other day, she basically said nuclear destruction is one temper tantrum away. I mean,
where was that nuclear plant that got shut down?
Oh, this is a scary one. That was in South Texas, actually.
What was the name of the plant?
Well, the one that got shut down was yesterday in, it's actually Mississippi, Grand Gulf, Mississippi. And let me read it to you. It came on the nuclear alert from the NRC yesterday, December 13th. And I'll just read the whole little nuclear alert as I want to do. Our listeners, that's one of my first things I started doing on this radio show, is reading these nuclear alerts. It's event number 53115. The event date was 12:12. Event time was 9:18 in the morning. And it's the name of the facility is a power reactor called Grand Gulf in Mississippi. And it's right now, it just changed to 16%. When I talked to you, it was 15%. So they're powering it back up. And it said at approximately 9:18 CST on Tuesday, Grand Gulf Nuclear Station experienced a loss of engineered safety features, transformer 11, which was powering the Division 1 EFS-B bus, BUS. Subsequently, the station experienced an automatic start of the Division 1 emergency diesel generator, partial isolation of the primary and secondary containment buildings, and the isolation of the reactor core isolation cooling system. It is currently not understood why the RCIC, which is the reactor core isolation cooling system, isolated during this event. a team is investigating this issue separately from the loss of the ESF 11 transformer. The cause of this event is under investigation at this time. No other issues or unexpected events occurred. Now, you notice it does not say no harm to human health.
Right.
That's amazingly absent.
Well, it sounds to me like they had a switch blow, so they couldn't move electricity, so the system automatically went into shutdown, which is exactly what it should do. And any fault situation, the plant automatically should scram the reactor, drop the control rods. And what happened this time, though, was the emergency core cooling system kicked on. Okay, I think this is what scares me. I did a show on the, I think it was the 20th of November, and in the middle of that show, I had this interview that this guy did, and he talked about the Stuxnet virus, which is, he believed, is what happened at Fukushima. The way that he described the systems at Fukushima, they were designed, the only way that they wouldn't work is if you turn the power on and shut them off, and then turn the power back off again. They were designed to be fail-safe, you know, like he described it like the brakes on a diesel truck. When there's no air to the system, the brakes are locked. Okay, and that's basically the safety. You would have to power up the system to get it to shut down, and indeed, that is what happened. They had switches that activated, and they didn't know why, and it was the core cooling system just shut down. What happened? I don't know. We'll turn it on. It won't turn on. Why? Because there's no power. Well, who shut it down? You had to have power to shut it down. And now there's no power, and there was no power, and what the hell? So the fact that the emergency core cooling system is erratic, and that dead set perfect safety system is the biggest, scariest thing of all. You know, mm-hmm. The Stuxnet virus is really nasty. No, it could tell a reactor your pressure vessel temperatures and everything are perfect when in fact it is literally getting ready to explode. That's what the Stuxnets were designed to do, and I don't know. They all share is all I can say to that. You know, in Japan, Fukushima is a prime example of using that virus to take down a nuclear plant or a whole country.
Mm. You know, so they could. It sounds like they could do this anytime they wanted, really.
Yeah, and another thing this guy said, and it has some credence, not all a lot, but he said that it was Israel that was behind it. Israel was angry at Japan because Japan had agreed to enrich uranium for Iran for their program. Okay, and so Japan was getting ready to sell uranium to Iran so they could get their nuclear program going, which was a threat to Israel. And so Israel had people a direct line in to their station with that virus, and they could have easily triggered that system to shut off one day in, and who would know the difference? The whole thing blows up. Hey, you can't get close enough to it to even look to see what could have happened. There's no investigation that can happen there. You know?
This is the hard part for me, Jerome, is we're so gaslit. We don't know what's right. We don't know what the truth is. We're on a need-to-know basis, and we don't need to know. So we're out there grasping at straws, trying to dig for information that has been very well hidden. I was speaking with Richard Woods, who is an investigative reporter from Seattle, yesterday on Facebook. And he's a gentleman that I've asked repeatedly to be on the show, but he doesn't come on because he doesn't want to make a statement. He doesn't want to say anything that he doesn't know 100% for sure, right? But his hesitation, I finally bared down into it. The big thing, his biggest challenge for him in terms of speaking out publicly is the fact that we don't know what the radiation level. They have hid all the documentation is literally buried away from the real information. is in boxes, buried away. And he says that he knows exactly where it's at, but it's in, there's a basement up in Seattle where he's repeatedly tried to get information, FOIA requests. They're just not giving it out no matter what. It's not coming out. I mean, they say it doesn't exist. There's people that tell him it exists. So it's really a matter of just pure murderous deception, this whole nuclear industry. They're educating our scientists incorrectly. They created this whole field of health physicists. The health physicists basically convince people that nuclear is okay, that it's not that bad. I mean, there has to be some overarching someone around the scene. I believe that they're doing it because they want to promote nuclear war. Like, I think this idea that we're going to have a nuclear war, Thomas Ackerman disagrees with me, because I think that before Poppy Bush dies, we're going to see a nuclear bomb go off. That guy, I heard him say this about, I don't know, in the early, I remember hearing him say this in the late 80s, I guess it was, maybe, it must have been 89. And he said something like, well, you know, they're really beautiful and he'd really love to see it again, although he didn't like the destruction, but he really wished we could do that again. I mean, the guy is mentally ill. These are the people that he made it in a passing comment on a television show. No one ever picked it up. I could never really find it when I got back into this. I heard it. It's just kind of like that thing with me seeing Donald Trump get on an airplane with Bill Clinton and two little girls and, you know, Epstein. I saw it with my own eyes, but it's been scrubbed. So this is how they work, right? And we're in this state where we're attempting to reconstruct life as we know it. But the reason this show is called The Age of Vision is because we are in a different age now. There's no going back. Look at this NETC. Around the country, the average is 158, 100. I mean, here in Oregon, we have like very low, 14, 15. But up in Corvallis, where they have that so-called nuclear facility that they promise you is definitely not harmful, today the levels up there are at danger levels at 204 counts per minute in Corvallis. That's about 40 miles away from where I live.
What side are you at? What side are you at there?
NETC.com. And this is run by citizen activists. This is not a government-run site, from my understanding. So this is a citizen activist. People can do the monitoring. And that what they do is they attempt to vet reasonable people to make these reports, right? So they want to make sure that who's ever doing these counts understands their equipment, understands how to report it, and can report it, and to get honest reporting. Because one of the things that we realized after Fukushima is they're not telling us. I mean, they're basically just not telling us the truth. That's one of the reasons I have Matt Holstrunk on every once in a while, because he compares what the EPA says to his own readings. He lives right in Corvallis.
Okay.
And Matt says that basically, when he does his comparisons, most of the time it matches. The EPA is telling us pretty much the truth, except for when it spikes, what happens is their data goes silent at the EPA. When he gets really high readings, there's just no data. There's just big, huge gaps. If you go to the EPA and you look at their RadNet, I think that's what it's called, RadNet, and you go to their, they have graphs. You can pick any city you want. And they will just show big blanks. They just don't report it. They just do not report it. And I think that this is standard around the world. That's what happens all around the world. And it's all run by the IAEA, which, frankly, in my view, is a criminal enterprise. I mean, their whole industry is about promoting the nuclear industry. I mean, for goodness sakes, they're talking about, when I read that Saudi Arabia wants to start mining for its own uranium, that they are definitely going to be mining for their own uranium, shivers ran down my spine. Because that means that the Saudi Arabians, with the help of Westinghouse, are going to get a nuclear bomb within the next 10 years if they start doing this. It's real, it's, you know, and when we talk about needing to get off the grid, yeah, we need to get off the grid. We may not have an option.
Jesus, you're right. You're absolutely right with that.
I mean, but so, yeah, then looking if we're off the grid and we don't have an option.
That map that you showed me, and thank you for that link, by the way. Yeah. That's netc.com.
Yeah.
And it's a great map. And right now in Anaheim,
I know.
424 counts per minute of gamma radiation.
Right. Now, if you look around and see, now, you have to remember, these are citizen scientists. Look right next to it. There's two other people reporting where the rates are 17, and the other rate is, what, 278, just east of it. So it makes you wonder where that guy lives and what type of facility, processing facility, is tucked away there. Because that's the other thing in America. I mean, as I've done this show over and attempted to bring information to our listeners, I myself have gathered a lot. I mean, I had no idea how, like right here in Albany, we have a fuse wrap site that is very high with radioactivity. That's about 65 miles north of me. People don't have any idea there. And so, but like in where this chart is, 424 counts per minute, my guess would be is there's some kind of processing plant right there, because east of it, the readings are 278, but west of it is 17. So how do you get right. something at Santa Monica? It's in Santa Monica is measuring 17. Anaheim is about 40 miles south, about 40 miles south, or maybe 50 miles south.
Disneyland. That's yeah. Anaheim, Disneyland.
And Santa Monica is north of Redondo Beach and LAX, actually. That's a good marker for people. It's a little bit north of LAX. And Anaheim is south of LAX. And then where it's 278, it's in Riverside. So the wind blows west to east, right? So it makes sense that if something was happening in Anaheim, that Riverside would show higher levels of radioactivity. And Santa Monica, that's right on the West Coast, shows a level of 17, which is not. So, but above north of there, if you look above north, if you look at this map, right north in Bakersfield, well, Bakersfield is quite a bit of ways, maybe 150 miles away from Santa Monica. So that shows very high levels, 634 gamma rays. But you know what else is happening out there? Those fires. So I think what's happening, and this is one of the things people aren't really thinking about out in Southern California, those fires are burning up all those layers. The West Coast was pretty well saturated with radioactive contamination after World War
yep.
II.
Exactly.
So all the fires...
And from Fukushima.
That's right. And from Fukushima. So there, it's... And from the nuclear testing, from the nuclear processing plants, from the nuclear facilities, there's military facilities where they're out there, you know, testing weapons that we don't know about, that they were testing weapons. So when these fires happen, all those radioactive contaminants that were safely tucked away inside the birches of the cores of the trees, now are being exposed, because it doesn't go away. It actually does not go away. It just sits there and waits. And so it, like if you take measurements of snow, for example, snow has very high levels of radioactive contamination, because the radioactivity from Fukushima just swirls around in the jet stream up there, and when it snows, it comes down.
Yeah. Exactly.
This is the happy news, Jerome. We're the happy morning show. I've stolen that phrase from Guy McPherson that says, I'm not a doom and gloomer. I'm a doom and happy facer. we're doom and happy face because really, this really is it, folks. There's no getting out of this pot. We're in the stew. So we have to find a way to be happy, find a way to protect ourselves.
We need to get off the grid. I think that's...
Well, the grid is going to go away. I don't think we need... I mean, we are going to have to get off the grid. We have to... You know, I think what's going to happen is when the grid collapses within a very quick period of time, they're going to unload all this, quote, new technology that they've been suppressing for the last 50 years. Right? They know. I've had Shaziz on. Shaziz talks about how he figures out how to create a electromagnetic grid for your own house where it's just simple physics. You can generate electricity through magnetics. I think that's the gist. You should actually interview him because I didn't understand. He was super sweet to me and was trying to... I kept asking these super basic questions. But the gist of what I got from him was that you can create an... individual electric power grids on every single house using electromagnetics, and we do not have to generate any negative consequences from powering our houses. We can have all the energy we want. And if he knows about it, I guarantee you the government knows about it. The IAEA knows about it. The Energy Department, you know, they all know about this. This is why Rick Perry is out there attempting to dismantle the Energy Department. There's hundreds of seats being unfilled. So, but I also think besides getting off the grid, we have to learn to eat and consume better, because you have to eat your greens. Greens help your body. You must take turmeric on a daily basis. Apple cider vinegar unfiltered on a daily basis helps. Vitamin C on a daily basis. And we're not talking like every few days. You have to be consistent and allow your body to take in these supplements. Because, well, didn't Dr. Circus talk about this? Magnesium, baking soda without aluminum in it. Right. I mean, I hope we can get him back on. He was an awesome guest. That was a really great interview you did, by the way.
Thank you.
So people should go to Jerome's, look at our podcast, and go listen to Dr. Circus again, S-I-R-C-U-S. Jerome interviewed him, I think it was sometime last week, I think last Wednesday. And he was a really awesome guest. He talked about the health effects on our body. He's living in South America. I mean, basically he said, we all need to go to the Southern Hemisphere, although the Southern Hemisphere is being infected by the nuclear industry. Argentina just signed multi-billion-dollar contracts. 2012, they opened up uranium mining in South America. There is a nuclear power plant in Brazil. So it's creeping in, and it's silently creeping in because nobody really pays attention to the nuclear industry because we're trained to just ignore it all.
Yeah, that's the nuclear taboo.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of nuclear taboo, on the nuclear alerts, it really freaked me out that there is no nuclear events for today. I've never seen that ever. No nuclear events for December 14th.
Well, it is still early.
Well, they post them up last night, but I mean, I guess they're just, you know, this is the hard part. When you have the head of the Department of Energy say that he doesn't believe in the Department of Energy and wants to dismantle it, I actually have really lost faith that the NRC is even going to start telling us very much.
Yeah.
If at all.
They would love to cut us off. You know, what we don't know won't hurt them.
Yeah. Well, it actually does, you know, it actually does. You know, hold on. This whole idea that you and I talk about on this radio show on the allowing people to understand the gravity of this situation about nuclear and the nuclear contamination, I mean, it's kind of sad the nuclear industry didn't heed John Goffman's words, because if they had held back maybe 30 years and let technology catch up with their knowledge. Like if they, we might have actually been able to develop an industry that didn't kill the planet. But at this point, we have so much contamination.
No, don't fool yourself, Lonnie. The industry would be the same. Believe me, they're being as careful as they can. Just radiation gets out around between and under and over, and it's just the devil himself. You're trying to contain the essence of the devil, and you can't completely do it safely. You can't. You know, so there. Yeah, no matter how you do it technologically, you're still going to have issues, and you're still going to have waste, and mining and milling and all that good stuff. So there is literally no way feasibly to do that in a way that doesn't just deal random death to a certain percentage of the people around it. And that's it. That's the bottom line. And to future generations as well of people. So, well, you know, that's what we're stuck with right now. We're stuck with the damage that's already been done is huge. And the only thing we can do is really nothing, but we can at least think we're doing something. You know, if everybody put two solar panels on their roof, that would shut down a couple power plants right there, you know?
Yeah, well, but then again, here you go. Like for me, I'm a renter, right? My landlord said, no, you can't put two nuclear panels on your roof.
Nuclear panels.
Solar panels, yeah. He basically said no to the solar panels. Honestly, I'm like, okay. So these are the obstacles that people face in terms of us getting off the grid and doing things differently, because people don't want their property damaged. They don't know enough about it, right? They're sort of brainwashed about what it means. So
They have self-standing panels that you could stick out if you have a backyard. You could just stick out in the backyard. Every little bit is, I think, the way you got to look at it. Every little bit that you can suck out of the sun instead of through a power line, that is hurting the power companies, and that is going to cause issues down the way. You know, because they build the capacity, and if all of a sudden they start losing capacity, what are they going to do? You know, they're going to have to shut down. They're going to have to shut down. So,
but I don't think it's about the energy. Again, it's about the money. I mean, we can do what we want here in the West, but Russia and China are moving forward. I mean, Russia just concluded a deal with the Egyptian president for a $30 billion project to build the largest nuclear power construction in the world. And the Russians are going to help them build it. And that was on December 11th, yesterday. If this is reported on MarketWatch. This is, let me read to you just the first two words of it. And maybe I'll read you the second one. You'll understand this. Galing LWLG has served as the legal advisor on one of the largest new build nuclear power construction projects in the world, the El Daba project in Egypt, worth more than $30 billion. Galing acted for Rosatom, state corporation, and its subsidiaries in successfully concluding the negotiation of the transaction. The project was formally announced in Egypt today in a ceremony attended by Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi and Russian Federation President Vladimir Putin. The El Daba project involved the construction of a 4,800 megawatt nuclear power station in Egypt, consisting of four 1,200 megawatt nuclear reactors, along with nuclear fuel, spent fuel and operations and maintenance related goods. The reactors will be owned and operated by Egypt's Nuclear Power Plants Authority, part of Egypt's Ministry of Energy.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, we in the States may be hip to the idea that nuclear energy is a waste of money and super expensive and very harmful, and shutting them down. There's a lot of pressure in the United States to shut that down. But they're just moving on. South America, the Middle East, anywhere that they can. I mean, World War II did not end. When they dropped the bomb, they just moved on. They tested how many weapons? I mean, the Marshall Islands was bombed 60 times. Just one thousands. Little set of islands. Right, thousands. And when they couldn't start, when they had to stop the testing, then they decided, okay, we'll build these nuclear power facilities. And against the wishes of the scientific community here, they built all these. They wanted over 300 in the United States. I mean, the fact that we have 125 speaks well to the efforts of the people stopping nuclear in the 80s and the 70s, to be honest. But they're moving on.
Yep.
And doom and happy face here.
We're going to pay the price, indeed.
Well, we are paying the price. Look at our children have cancer. People are getting sick. How many birth defects do we see? The autism rate is off the charts. You know, the spectrum of autism, schizophrenia. I mean, these are common things. And then people get cancer. I had a client call me up yesterday and tell me that he has cancer. Like,
where does he live?
Seattle. Of course.
Really?
Yes. And, you know, Seattle is right where there's a lot of nuclear facilities up there. You know, that's where we keep our... That's where we keep our submarine.
Fukushima went over there.
Yes. Yes, they're bomb... Plus, he eats fish. I'm like, dude. He's like, well, I don't eat bad all the time. I'm like, do you eat fish? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, stop eating fish. For real, people don't believe that the fish is contaminated, but it is highly... The fish magnetize the radiation 1,000 times its normal sight because they think it's potassium. So a fish is 1,000 times more toxic to eat than drinking a gallon of water that's unfiltered.
Yeah, bioaccumulation.
You know, well, it's not even bioaccumulation. Bioaccumulation means it adds up, right? You keep eating it like the cows. They keep eating it because they eat so much grass. It constantly accumulates. But the fish actually change the nature of how it's ingested in their body. They think it's potassium. So their bodies have, over the years, evolved to magnetize to create more of it in their body than they normally took on the first time. Each time they eat it, they magnetize it 1,000 times. So
I don't want to call shenanigans on that, but
that's not shenanigans.
I know that the fish, like we do, have a sort of a thyroid gland or have different glands which suck up different elements, you know. And that's why the same thing in a human. You know,
we don't magnetize it. The difference is it goes into our thyroid, right? But with a fish, because there's so little potassium in the water, when they're swimming through it, they magnetize it 1,000 times because when they're swimming through the ocean, they need the potassium. So their body magnetizes it 1,000 times. So they get enough potassium in their bodies. It's one of their ecological things, evolutionary things that they've done. So they can live in the ocean. So that's why fish is in particular very, very unhealthy. And guess what, Jerome? We only have like 20 seconds left.
All right. And so this ends at 8:59, right?
Exactly. So we've got... everybody, put your courage feet on. Be a superhero for 8 minutes a day, man.
All right, guys, you have a good day, and thank you so much for listening. I'll catch you next Wednesday morning.
Talk to you guys later.